And welcome back to Innovation on Dakota Midday. I'm Kara Hetland. We're broadcasting from the Plain Green Conference at the Orpheum Theater in downtown Sioux Falls. And joining me now is Ross Chapin. He is an author, an architect, and you coined the phrase, is that right?
Pocket neighborhoods.
Right.
Thank you for having me here.
Yes, thank you for being here. I appreciate it.
Good.
And welcome to South Dakota.
Thank you.
First time here?
Oh, no. I'm from Minnesota originally and would make my way through this area often as a younger person.
Okay. And how did you come up with the term pocket neighborhood?
Well, we had created a project of 8 cottages around a little garden in the little town that I'm in. And it was on a relatively busy street. And as we were building it, I thought, oh, this is like a little pocket storing its jewels, you know, off the, you know, away from the hecticness of life. And so I began to call it a pocket neighborhood.
Okay. And it has taken off.
It has, all over the country and even around the world.
Okay, and you are designing these types of neighborhoods?
We are designing these neighborhoods. We originally, I teamed up with a developer to create a project, as I mentioned, of 8 cottages around a garden and parking to the side. And that was one of, I think, 6 projects that I've been involved in as a co-developer. But I've designed dozens of neighborhoods across the country. Everywhere from 4 to 5 houses to 150 in a much larger neighborhood with many, many more aspects to it.
So it's more about one shared space, right, for these neighborhoods.
Yes.
Is that right? It doesn't necessarily have to be a garden.
Here's the gist of it.
Mm-hmm.
When we come into relation with a small number of people, the conversation is spontaneous. We spark up a chat.
Mm-hmm.
We engage in with each other. If we live in a neighborhood of 200 houses fronted by garage doors and big grand foyers, we're going to be isolated, even though we're in a community of 200 houses. But if we're in a neighborhood that's more pedestrian, that's more engaging, for example, with front porches, or like Lisa was saying, with the backyards that open to a shared garden, for example, the conversations are going to be more neighborly, more personal. And so what I'm trying to do is bring the neighbor back into neighborhood.
And who decides where this happens? Or is it at the architecture level? Is it the developer level? Is it at somebody who wants to live in one?
And does it happen with the cities and the policy?
Mm-hmm.
And I will say it can happen everywhere. And that said, I believe that the cities, the policymakers, the planners, the elected officials need to consider the character and the vibrancy of their neighborhoods, of their of where they are, and to know that we don't come in just one size. In fact. 1 in 2 person households represent more than 60% of households in the country, and larger family households are only 25% of everything. So the idea that we all live in the same size house on these cul-de-sacs that spread from here to nowhere, doesn't make sense anymore. We come in all sizes and kinds. Now, that said, no matter who we are, we need to have a place that not only we come home to our own abode, but we are coming home and being in relationship to a few neighbors nearby. That makes a lot of sense. So I think the policy needs to encourage that to start with.
Does it have to be new?
No.
Okay.
No. For example, Lisa was describing just a few moments ago how a few neighbors decided to take out their back fence and put in a garden. Well, in Davis, California, there was a group of people in the center part of the city, and they were started with 3 neighbors, and then there were 4, and then there were 5, and pretty soon, well, over 10 years, the entire block, all their fences were taken out. And there's a pathway that goes from one yard to another, to another, to another. And when the next neighbor comes in, they think of something that would be a benefit to everyone. And so, you know, for her, it might be the chicken coop, or it might be the garden, or it might be a little play structure, or it might be the last person that came in Davis was really into bees. You wouldn't think that would be a good neighbor thing, and yet in their location it was.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, think about in a neighborhood, where is your active outdoor area? Now, this may seem radical, but bring your picnic table to your front yard and see what happens. You know, it'll be curious. You'll begin to, you know, engage your other neighbors more. Plant, you know, a raised bed garden in the front. That's an easy thing to do. So have it as part of landscaping.
So it can just come from existing neighborhoods can just create this space.
Yes. I think in America we have so turned the dials up on the value of privacy that we've become isolated. I think personal privacy is very important, and we design for that. We must have that. And yet we must have an engagement with those around us as well. And so there needs to be layering of public exposure and private. If you're too exposed, it's too much. You retreat. If you're too private, you go nuts.
So you say, you were talking that elected officials need to incorporate this in city planning.
Yes.
But it can also go from the bottom up saying, hey, I like my neighbor. Let's share this backyard. Let's take down our fences.
That's right.
You plant the garden, I'll get the chickens. We'll share.
That's right.
So it can take on a different meaning. I mean, you can't just design a pocket neighborhood and expect people to be happy there, but you can in your own neighborhood create the pocket.
Right. That's right. I think the places that we live in can support or thwart our true sense of community. And in the way that they support, I get into great detail about that in the book that I've written, Pocket Neighborhoods, to talk about the particulars of the places that we live and how it can engage with those immediately around us while preserving enough privacy. And so it's a lot of nuanced design, but it's also very straightforward. That virtually anybody can do.
Does it matter what kind of climate you live in? I mean, in my neighborhood, I will say, you know, fairly soon, I won't probably speak to my neighbors until next spring, and I'll just say, how was your winter, you know, every spring, because of activities, because of the weather, because just getting home and it's dark longer.
It's dark, and there's snow, and it's cold.
Right.
This is true. And I think in this climate and the climate that I grew up in Minnesota, you know, we want the cars closer to our house. Perhaps even you might want to sleep with your car. I don't think it's required. I do think that there can be some separation. But I think in this climate, you know, they get closer. However, we don't have to be isolated behind a grand foyer in garage doors with nothing out front. I think that if we begin to make the street side more engaging and active, it would be helpful.
Instead of the backyard?
Maybe in addition to the backyard. Mm-hmm. Maybe the backyard. Think about gradients of privacy. And so the backyard is intimate with your family. Mm-hmm. But it might be the side yard engages the street a little more. And maybe the front, if depending upon what you have, perhaps you've got a shade tree and it's just wonderful at a certain time of the summer in the evening to gather on that side of the house because you've got a nice outlook. Mm-hmm. And again, another way to engage. Here's another thing. Every neighborhood has people with dogs. And in the hot summer, when dogs are out, they need water. So maybe think about, I know one neighbor who put a little foot-activated dog fountain right out at their street front, and a spot to just get back to the dogs in the community. Or maybe as part of your fence, you build in a little bench because there are elderly people nearby. Or maybe it's paying attention to who's around you, because when you're living more with an engagement on the street, you can see, you know, whether Florence across the street has her curtains up at 10 o'clock, which she usually does. And if she doesn't, we'll go over and check her out. How's she doing? Or maybe the fellow who's you know, getting on in life and really shouldn't be out trimming his hedge. You just pay attention to that. And it's a shift in attitude as much as anything. Mm-hmm. It's being a good neighbor. And I think from my experience in growing up in the Midwest, and I don't know how to describe this, but I can see in the winter and throughout the year, the sense of good neighborness is just intrinsic to, you know, Midwesterners, I believe.
What kind of neighborhood do you live in?
I live two blocks from where I work, mm-hmm. and from the grocery store and from a theater. And I live up the hill from a place where I can go swimming in the Puget Sound. And so I walk to work or ride my bike if I'm late. It takes me about a minute and a half riding, which is not enough. And I have a lovely garden and lots of friends. My daughter grew up there, and she was a free range kid in town. And, you know, this was a place where at a certain age we felt that she was safe, and she felt herself safe to walk about. And her friends were, you know, around the block, and they hung out in the yards and the alleys, and that's how they grew up.
Mm-hmm. And so, as I mentioned earlier to Lisa, you know, we spent a lot of time leaving those tight-knit communities, the farm, for the city, and now we're trying to bring that piece of it back, too?
Yeah, yeah. I think that the idea of pocket neighborhoods is not a radical left-wing idea of communes. I think it is it's native human. We're social animals, social beings. And I think that if we have places that acknowledge our social nature as well as our need for privacy, then I think we'll be happiest. And I think the fabric of our society will be stronger. Because when we have networks of friendship, networks of care, networks of relationships, then we have a better sense of belonging, a sense of community, and engagement in our culture. And I think that that's the building blocks for a resilient community and for a real democratic community.
And this pocket neighborhood has taken off because of that very reason.
And that's right.
Okay. And coming up... and. I know we have 1 minute left, I know, but it comes from the architect perspective, do you think? Or how is this going to continue to grow and spread?
If people go to the website pocket-neighborhoods.net, there's a lot of information there for everyone to look at. And I okay. think everyone can do it, whether you're an architect, a planner, a local citizen, go for it.
Okay. All right. Ross, I want to thank you so much for being on Innovation today and being part of the program and speaking here at the Plain Green Conference as well.
What a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much. When we, I guess we're not coming back. This is the end of the program, but I want to thank Steve Munson, Steve Zwemke, Nathan Poole, Chris Loffrey, and all of my guests for being on the program today. Matthew Hine, Brooke Orcutt, Lisa Taylor, and Ross Chapin for being on the program. And on Monday during Dakota Midday, we continue to bring you a new documentary series on education produced by American Radio Works. And it's called Tomorrow's Colleges and examines the major challenges facing America's higher education system. That is Monday at noon central here on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. That'll do it for Innovation today. Thanks for listening. I'm Kara Hetland.